This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
You're listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 342, brought to you by the Seagate GoFlex Satellite, graphically, and iFanboy listeners like you. Welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 342. My name is Ron Richards, and I'm here with Connor Kilpatrick.
Hello. Good one, Ron.
Thank you.
Hold it together.
And Josh Flanagan.
How's everybody doing today?
I was so tempted to say something else. We're from the website iFanboy.com, which is all about the enjoyment of comic books and the world of comic books. And every week we read a big stack of comics, and one of us goes to the website and writes a review of the book that he deems the pick of the week. And we come back here to discuss it, as well as all the other great books that came out this week and other comics fun, happy times. Well, we hope they're happy. They're meant to be happy. We might reboot or relaunch. I don't know. We're still working it out.
We need to start from number one?
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Yeah. That sounds like a great idea. Can we get a new name?
Yep. So before we get to the show, just a quick reminder.
Dorkcast? Geek something?
We need to get the word geek in there. I think.
I just want to make sure it says nerd. You know, just
I nerd geek forecast. And we do the weather as well.
Geeks explosion.
So quick warning, we're going to talk about what happens in the book. So if you haven't read your books, we might spoil them. So make sure you've read your books and press pause and come back and listen after you've read them, or just be warned that we're going to ruin it for you. So you'll find out who killed Captain America. Sorry.
What?
I'm also doing the podcast as if it was 2006.
Okay.
Crossbones!
So, all right, this week Connor had the pick, and it was a very familiar one at that.
Well, I was writing a Pick of the Week review, and I was trying to think of a book that has come out of nowhere, like Fury Max, that we have all loved, the three of us, and not expected to love. Like Saga, we all knew we were going to love.
Yeah.
But Fury Max, I wasn't expecting.
The first Rocketeer Adventures. Maybe that's the closest.
Yeah. Fury Max number 4 was the pick of the week, and I love it. I know Josh loved it. I know Ron has loved it up to this point. I haven't talked about this issue yet, though. Ron, did you love this issue as well, as much as I did?
Oh, I absolutely love this issue.
That was the right answer.
Yes.
We were going to shut the show down if you said no.
It's true.
In the first issue of Fury Max, the first page showed us a grizzled old man Fury sitting in a terry cloth robe with a drink in his hand and a cigar, recording into a reel-to-reel machine his adventures. His dictaphone.
His
adventures. He was talking about his time in Indochina, which was Vietnam. In this issue, this is the start of the second arc, which is a great jumping on point if you haven't read the first arc. We camera pulls back a bit to show now that the bed next to him is full of three naked hookers who have been passed out because Fury is just too much man for them.
Hey, I'm not paying you to sleep.
Yeah. So one can only imagine what we're going to see in the next arc when it pulls out even further.
The one has one long tube sock.
Yeah, I saw that.
Just one.
Man, Parlov. Parlov is awesome.
Parlov is awesome, but who's even more awesome is that Garth Ennis is sort of made to write these stories. And we've talked a lot about how he writes great war stories, and that's his really main interest, and he wishes he could write war stories all the time in comics, but no one buys them. So what he does is he manages to backdoor in war stories through the characters of like Nick Fury in these Max books. He wrote another mini series of Fury stories way back in the early part of the decade, last decade. And Born as well. So this is the first arc. We had Fury in Indochina, and this arc opens 1961. He's training Cuban exiles for the Bay of Pigs, and he's not happy because
he knows it's a clusterfuck.
He knows it's a clusterfuck. He also doesn't he misses being in the field. He doesn't like being a training officer. He doesn't like not being able to be out there and help the guys that he's trained. And he also knows that Bay of Pigs is a disaster waiting to happen. And you can really tell. And I wrote in my review that Ennis is a history buff. He uses Fury as his mouthpiece to explain why they should have known from beforehand that it was going to be a disaster, which it was. If you know anything about history, you know that it was a disaster. The invasion was repelled, and Castro was still in power to this day, the Castro family. So Fury is not happy, and he wants to convince the government not to go through with it. But instead of that happening, he goes to a meeting with a bunch of grizzled old Cuban exiles who are sort of
not Ernest Hemingway, but
who are sort of in charge of the whole thing, working with the government, and they tell Fury they want him to go into Cuba and assassinate Castro before the invasion because they feel like if Castro's dead, the invasion will work. It's a setup issue. We get the major players, we get the major scenarios and where they are and who's there, who everyone is. Mostly it's just about Ennis writing a wonderfully interesting and fun Nick Fury with amazing Gorlin Parloff art.
The kind of Nick Fury that I want to read.
Yes.
Because there are different types of Nick Fury. And quite honestly, I kind of feel bad for people who are reading comics only within the past couple of years because you've been deprived of the good Nick Fury.
Really, just Nick Fury in general.
Yeah.
He was in Secret Warriors, Jonathan Hickman's book. But other than that, he was relegated to the background. He was taken out of his post as head of S.H.I.E.L.D. And now he's being replaced by his son, Nick Fury Jr. And
is that a real thing?
Yeah.
Oh, that's horrible.
He's Nick Fury Jr.'s. Jackson, you didn't know that?
He looks shockingly like Ultimate Nick Fury and Movie Nick Fury.
Oh, is that what? That's how they're doing it?
Yep.
We have an article on our website.
Yeah. Battle scars.
So it's the perfect character for him. He's battle hardened. He's super capable. But he's also, he doesn't, you know, always win. He didn't win the last arc. His unit was wiped out by the Vietnamese. So he's a great soldier, but he's also human. And he likes to drink and he likes to fuck and he likes to fight. And it's the perfect kind of thing for Garth Ennis, who, you know, comes around to remind everyone that, hey, I'm still one of the best writers in comics. Don't forget that.
I tell you what my favorite moment from this whole book was.
The first page?
Speaking to that. Well, that was fun. But the very last page, actually. The girl walks up and she decides she's going to marry the senator. You know, I'm 36. I'm not a spring chicken anymore. And she walks away in the last three panels. You know, there's only one line of dialogue. And it's that senator is saying, that's mine.
Yep.
And it doesn't say she. He says that. And it just says, and then he's behind him sort of steaming. Like it says everything about the relationship of those three characters with one another at that time. And it's just elegant. It's really, really nice.
There's an elegance to this book that is like no other.
Mm-hmm. The Parloff art really needs to be talked about more because.
Yep.
Do you remember how, Ron, we loved the Avengers 1959 because it had sort of that old school vibe? And here, in that scene, Nick Fury's got the old, collared, the yellow shirt, which. It looks like it just could be a collared from any era, but the coloring, the cut of the shirt, it looks like a 1960s shirt. And it has
a Kramer shirt.
Yeah, it has kind of vibe. And Parloff's, he does lots of different characters. He does lots of different nationalities. He does all the different background scenarios, locations, and it's all very authentic and genuine looking. And it's really...
Look at the girl's hair. Look at her swimsuit. He's made it all authentic. He's done. The only thing I noticed, there is one page where it looks like he put some big tribal tattoo on one of the guy's arms that in the training base when they're at the airfield, which doesn't seem to fit. Just kind of weird. It's one of the Cuban something or others.
Nationalists.
Yeah. The thing where they're talking about the...
Oh, I see that. Yeah, I see it. Yeah, when they're on the landing strip, the dude with the hat.
Yep. Yeah. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, that's a little weird.
But besides that,
yeah,
this is a book that you wouldn't think that all three of us love, but all three of us love.
It's quite unlikely. It is, but it goes to show that it's like it's fucking good. Like when it's in Garth Ennis's wheelhouse, I know I didn't read those Dynamite.
I hope that makes the trade.
I didn't read those Dynamite books that you guys read. Like I'm not totally as much as into the war stuff as you guys are, but like. Parloff's art is great, and this just sucks you into the world. And there's something that, and I don't know if it's by doing the framing sequence of an older Fury looking back, but it's like it's very cinematic. It's very like I got lost in this, and you just for a moment you're in 1960 whatever 1962 in Cuba. You know, and it's amazing how something so cartoony as Parlov's art, and but is so grounded in reality and real events, can almost transport you to the, where the story is taking place.
It's just great illustration.
Yeah.
Great comic book storytelling.
Yeah. That's great. But it was a week of unlikely shared enjoyments, because talk about the book least likely for all of us to enjoy as much as we did. But did you read He-Man and the Masters of the Universe #1?
Can I say this is the best Philip Tan art I've ever seen?
It really is. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. This is written by James Robinson with art by Philip Tan. And this is great. Almost as good as the ad for the PowerCon on the back of the book.
What is up with that?
With Tim Seeley in the lower right-hand corner looking completely out of place.
I know.
So
if you ever get the chance to look at the guy who did the voice of Lion-O, don't.
Yeah. Thundercats,
he used to do voices on Imus. Nice. Larry Kenny.
Now, did you know you're at a Thundercats He-Man Con when the He-Man marketing manager is a featured guest?
And it's sponsored by MTV Geek. What the fuck?
What we did was type up a press report. We sent it out to everybody. Anyway, in those days, we had facts.
Anyway, regardless, this is James Robinson. While we've read a lot of James Robinson's superhero stuff over the past couple of years, but he's good at this kind of story.
Yeah.
You know, and while his old creator-owned book with Paul Smith, Leave It a Chance, wasn't as, I don't want to say medieval, but wasn't as kind of fantasy-based on this, this kind of reminded me of the, because Leave It a Chance had a little bit of fantasy element to it, but this is very much... this was great. I was surprised.
They tweaked the story. It's not exactly the story you remember from the cartoon, if you actually remember the cartoon, which if you're our age, it was a big deal.
Yeah, a big deal.
I actually got an honorable mention in Create the He-Man Character Contest.
Really? What was your character?
I was probably 8 years old, so my character was basically He-Man's cousin. It was just He-Man again. but I won the Grayskull playset.
I had the Grayskull Castle. I had the Snake. I had Skeletor's Castle, Snake Mountain, and that had that really bad, cheap microphone.
Yeah.
The echo sound.
Yeah.
But yeah, I won that for basically. He had a cat. He rode the cat. He looked like He-Man. It was dumb. So in this issue, Prince Adam isn't a prince.
Wait, Connor.
Connor, you created Keldor.
Did I?
No, Keldor was Skeletor before Skeletor.
Yeah. No, it was Prince Adam's head? Cousin.
Connor, what was your character's gimmick?
There was no gimmick. He was basically the same thing. He had a cat. I just changed the name.
Did you notice that all the He-Man figures were basically the He-Man body?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we're not morons. I was five and I got that.
The moment Beastman came out, I got excited.
I'll back it up. If I was 11 or 12, this would have been the greatest thing on earth. It was a little sparse. It wasn't like I don't really care what happens to He-Man now.
It's totally playing on the nostalgia angle. Totally.
Yeah. Which, you know, I'm not necessarily
the page where Beastman walks in was great.
Yeah.
I was really impressed by Philip Tan in this issue. And that's, if you know me, that's a pretty bold statement to make. But
it was well done. It wasn't bad.
On the last page when Skeletor is sitting on his – is he holding Hordak's head?
Looks like it.
Isn't that – that's weird.
There's a word that's never been said here.
Hordak. Do you remember Hordak? Hordak.
Is he the one that had all the sort of interchangeable bits?
No. Hordak was when Skeletor got a little tired, they needed to introduce a new villain.
So he was the Serpentor of the He-Man.
Yeah. He was like the second wave of villains.
If you punched him in the chest, his little thing flipped around to show damage.
No, that was battle damage.
That He-Man. Was battle damage Skeletor.
Yeah, battle damage Skeletor.
He was part of one of those kind of lines.
Yeah,
it was He-Man and one. There was a whole battle damage line.
Oh man, who was it? It was Trapjaw.
Remember,
the hook on his head?
With the hook on his head, because you could make him ride a zip line down his head, and then he could change his arm to different guns.
The best was Mechanek, who could get
Mechanek.
Mechanek.
It's like, hold on, so could somebody look over this fence? hang on. It's only 8 feet, so I can totally do that.
9 feet, though. I'm just a screw to you.
They're over there.
Triclops.
They're definitely over there.
Remember Triclops? He just had three different eyes.
Different eyes.
Or Manny faces. He had the man's face, then there was the robot, and then there was the monster.
It's like the Garbage Pail Kids.
Oh, they were such great characters. Ram Man.
But Ram Man, they finally changed up the model.
Yeah, they did.
So if you're at all interested in the story, Adam is not a prince. He's a woodsman, and he's in the woods, you know, doing his job, cutting down trees, and he has some sort of vision of himself as He-Man, and something's going on, and this mysterious bird gets him to follow him into the woods where he runs into Beast-Man, and you find out that Adam is not all he seems, and Skeletor is sending people to kill Adam because he is afraid of him, because clearly he is He-Man.
I believe he is a prince.
Can we just screw the rest of the show and talk about He-Man for the rest of the show? Let's totally just become a He-Man podcast.
I colored in Man-at-Arms' face to give him a mustache because the toy didn't have the mustache.
You're like, right. Yes. Yeah.
I colored on a mustache for him.
Oh no! So. It's funny because I reversed that because I had the figure first and then I watched the cartoon and I was pissed that he had a mustache in the cartoon because he didn't have one on the figure.
I remember getting Man-at-Arms is my first He-Man figure. Like, I'd get a present on Christmas Eve, just one.
Yep.
And I opened it up and I was like, the fuck is this?
What's this dude do?
I had no other characters. I got that guy. I was like, where's fucking He-Man? Who's this green bitch?
He had yellow armor you could strap to his arms and legs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, great.
I mean, it's just like He-Man from the neck down.
10.
With a lame helmet.
Why the fuck can't Battle Cat move?
That Page Boy haircut. Yeah. Battle Cat had that nice felt skin, which was cool.
No, that was
Puma. No, yeah. That was
Skeletor had that.
Yep.
Yeah. That's
what are we gonna name this girl? Evil Lynn. That was somebody's ex girlfriend. Yeah, Lynn. Well, I named a toy after you. I'll see you in court.
They wouldn't let me do Bitch Lynn, so it's Evil Lynn.
Bitch Lynn. You know, that was probably one of the guys in the back of the comic, too.
Oh, it was a
funny story about that.
Mark Taylor, 80s He-Man toy designer.
Yep.
Oh, God.
So, if you want to...
And he sent a bunch of the figures to his ex-wife. This is the action figure. No coincidence.
Now, Avengers versus X-Men number 7 was the worst issue.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
It was really bad. It was rough.
It's just Civil War.
It's Fraction and Coypel, and even Coypel's art was a bit off.
Yeah, Coypel was not as solid as he was the first shot of Tony working, I thought it was Wolverine.
Yeah, this was the worst issue of the series so far.
Yeah.
It was really hard to follow the action. It was really hard to follow the story.
Yep.
I mean, overall enjoyed it in some sense or another every issue, but this one is the first one I put it down. I was like, ugh.
They're making it challenging. I think the extended, you know, making it 12 issues is not a good idea. I don't know. I thought for a moment, I thought they killed Hawkeye, and then I was going to be impressed.
Yeah.
Like how?
Magic engulfed him in flames and burned him, and then they took his body and Cyclops Phoenix is healing him, and then they're going to put him in a jail cell.
Okay, but not like this.
No, not like this.
Not like that at all.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fine then.
Yeah.
What was the jail cell called? Like X cell or something like that?
Yeah, X Brig.
X Brig.
Also, did you notice Colossus was human form?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, which is the first time that's happened since the Juggernaut things.
He's got big old mutton chops.
Yeah. Weird. Chops. Yeah.
They're having design issues with Colossus, from what I understand.
Yeah. Basically, the big maneuver here is that the X-Men are kicking the Avengers' asses, and so Iron Fist comes with the guy from Kunlun and says, we need to take Hope and train her to fight the Phoenix, and then Tony's just like, can we all go to Kunlun? And so the Avengers are retreating to Kunlun. Yeah. Oh, and then Namor is attacking Wakanda, because Namor's had it. So.
Is Namor having an affair with Emma?
I mean, they smooched, right?
But is that happening anywhere else?
That was so innocent.
I don't know. That was the first time they smooched in a while.
Rough. Yeah. It was rough. Now, call me crazy, but I thought before Watchmen, Ozymandias might have been my favorite one.
Well, before we get into the story, strip out all the words and just look at the glory of Jay Lee. I fucking love this.
I loved it, yeah.
What I thought was that at first, in my first glance looking at it, I thought, this is not the same Jay Lee that we've seen. It's been a while since he's done a whole issue of a thing that I've read, and it looks a little different. I noted that there's a ton of profile shots. It's actually one of the easiest things to do. Like, it feels like a little bit of a cheat, but it's kind of how he draws, so it fits with his style. Yeah. Then at the other hand, I was like, you know, J.H. Williams, isn't the only or totally original practitioner of comic book art was the other thing about it. It won me over by
that,
a while.
What does that mean?
Like, I was just looking at these pages, and I was like, these are pretty interesting sort of out there pages.
Oh, the layouts and stuff.
Yeah, okay, it just like the
texture of
it.
Yeah,
the
texture of the style.
Yeah. Oh, I love the circles. I mean, it almost felt vertical. You know what I mean? Like, it almost felt like a strip of pages going in, you know what I mean? Like, you know, like in that way. Because each page had a circle in it, and
page... It doesn't really read right to left. It reads down.
It reads down, yeah. I mean, you could almost take this apart and stitch it into one strip and let it run, you know what I mean, like a film strip, and I think it would be even almost more effective.
I think Len Wein did a really fine... I mean, obviously, and if you don't know this at home, Len Wein was the editor for the series. He was there.
For Watchmen
originally, so he knows it as well as anybody. He was involved in the whole thing, and unlike the pirate story, which I don't really need to get more information on, this was kind of interesting because these are the stories of Adrian. Is it Veidt or Veidt? I don't even know how to pronounce it.
I would say Veidt.
Yeah, I mean, these are basically expanded on the things that he talked about when he sort of gave his origin. I thought there were bits where the dialogue wasn't quite right, wasn't quite as good as it could have been. Then there's is he gay?
Yeah, I know, that's the other thing too.
He's Omni.
which makes sense for the character. I'm to just be like, whatever. And also, you know, Alexander the Great, let's be honest.
Yep.
I don't know that I like
if you strip away what it is, and again, this is what you have to do for me anyway, is as a story on its own, I found it wonderfully intriguing. I liked the whole journey he took, and now, when you get to the end and he puts the suit on, I might not find that part interesting. But I like the journey through Turkey and recreating the Alexander the Great steps and building his fortune. Yeah. I thought it was interesting as a standalone story of a guy. You know, it doesn't have to necessarily be Ozymandias.
Yeah, but in that case, it was just the story they already told.
God, I'm jumping through so many mental hoops to enjoy these books.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I feel the same way about this one that I did about the last one. Like, it was good.
Right. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. I mean, it's again, I feel the same way as I did the last one. Like, admittedly, this one's staying away from the Watchmen story, at least for now. And it does give a lot more information about Ozymandias, but I don't know if I want to know this.
Yeah, that's
but then pretty. You don't need to. I mean, then just disregard it.
Yeah,
I mean,
no, exactly.
It's fan fiction, basically.
Well, once I know, it's hard to ignore it.
Actually, you know what it was? It was like, I was thinking about this as I was reading it. It was like, how many of those Star Wars novels did you read?
So many.
30? 40?
Yeah.
I read at least that many.
Yeah.
Until it killed Chewbacca.
Yeah, and that's when I stopped too. Yeah.
So I was halfway through one of the Rogue Squadron books and I just went, what am I doing?
They were great.
That was literally it. No, it was. It was, and it was fine then, but I just thought, I what am I doing?
But think about how many things that those books changed or explained or retconned.
I don't remember any of it.
Exactly. So the point is, like, you can wipe that shit away if you don't like it. Yeah. It goes away. It doesn't have to permanently affect your enjoyment. I watch the movies now. I don't think about those books.
I do a little.
Jedi Academy books, Rogue Squadron books.
I didn't get that far. I just read the Zahn trilogy.
Oh no, I read 40
the
books.
Tales
from the Cantina.
I think of the Tales books every time I see any of those characters in either the Cantina, Jabba's Palace, or the Bounty Hunters.
Yeah. Tales of the Bounty Hunters was awesome.
Yeah. Han Solo Adventures. Yeah. Those old ones are written in the 80s were really good.
That story about Malakili, the Rancor Keeper.
Yeah.
That was a good story. Yeah.
Great story.
Yep.
Anyway, the point is, you can get rid of that stuff if you need to. It doesn't have to permanently affect you.
Yeah.
Chewbacca's alive.
Chewbacca will always be alive.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah, I know. This one's tough. Can we go back to talk about He-Man?
Mechanic.
Stinkor.
Stinkor. Do you remember Stinkor?
The thing about this toy is it smells like shit.
Wait, no, it was Merman's body and head painted like a skunk and smelled like shit.
It didn't stink.
It did stink. You just stick your nose right in there, but it's.
How many parents probably bought that and were like, wait, it does what?
Why did I do that?
I control what this kid buys, and I paid for this.
It was honestly, you got from a toy standpoint, it was genius, and all they had to do was sculpt the heads.
Yeah.
And so all they do, they had the same bodies. They said the heads, it was smart.
Right,
smart.
Yeah. It was really
maybe,
smart.
Maybe a different harness. A carapace.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but Manny Faces had some more sculpting going on there. That was a dense figure too. I could hit somebody with that Manny Faces
and
hurt them.
Yeah, but he was pretty. He had the same legs and thatch brief.
True. Yeah. No, it's the head part that was really heavy. That was yeah.
The four horsemen, the He-Man toy sculptors, didn't have to do a lot of body sculpting.
No, and they like whenever they got to something that was hard, they just decided not to do it well. Like they were like Orko. Nah, he's solid.
Oh, Orko. You see, fucking Orko. Because Orko was a product of the cartoon.
Yeah.
Orko was an OG. And then they did make the Orko figure, and it was one of those things where you put the plastic thing in and pulled it out, and it would zoom across the table.
Yeah, he was solid.
Yeah. Tila. Do you remember Tila?
Tila, yeah. The girlfriend.
Yeah. Man-at-Arms' daughter, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And She-Ra. And then She-Ra came and changed the game.
Yeah, She-Ra was annoying because then it was like, no, it's for girls too.
But it wasn't.
I know it wasn't. All right, well, we would like to thank Seagate GoFlex Satellite for sponsoring this episode. And if you need an external hard drive, you really need to take a look at the Seagate GoFlex Satellite. It's the only wireless portable hard drive that can stream content to your iPad and up to 8 other devices, Android devices, tablet devices, anything you might have, you can stream media content to it. It's got a 500 gig hard drive, Wi-Fi access, and a rechargeable battery. Satellite can carry your entire library of video, music, pictures, and documents to be shared on your iPad or any other device via the free GoFlex Media app or the web browser. So check it out. Go to ifn.by/SeagateGoFlex, and we'll have a link on the show notes for this episode. And honestly, if you've got kids and you travel road trips, or if you're going on a flight, if you're going to San Diego Comic-Con and you want to watch some things on the plane, you can bring you're not limited to storage on your device.
Just watch this and shut up.
Yeah.
Kid.
You're almost there. Are you there yet?
I try not to be. Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, see when he's older and when you drive to Florida, then see how.
No, I mean, I get that. No, we don't have anything in the car yet. Yeah. It's cool. Although we listen to Elmo songs when we're in the car together a lot. Nice. And it's not nice. It's the worst thing that's ever happened to ears.
Is He-Man on Netflix?
I think He-Man is on Netflix.
The it cartoon?
Is. You got to start making him watch He-Man.
Oh. You know who worked on He-Man, don't you?
Who? Paul Dini.
J. Michael Straczynski.
And Paul Dini.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what's also on Netflix is the classic He-Man holiday special where Skeletor yells about the Christmas spirit.
Oh, Jesus.
I don't think we're as good at this as we are with the G.I. Joe. I'll be honest.
Thank you, Seagate GoFlex, for sponsoring this episode and for our event at the San Diego Comic-Con, which we'll be talking about later in the episode.
Animal Man number 11, and I'm going to say something that is maybe controversial, but not to these two guys, and that is that Alberto Ponticelli should be the new artist on Animal Man, all with due respect to Steve who's very good. But Alberto Ponticelli really captures the feel that Travel Foreman set up in the first couple issues, that really weird sort of unusual vibe that Pew has sort of smoothed out a bit.
I agree. Yep.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
We all agree.
Alberto Ponticelli was great. I mean, this was a contender for pick of the week because it really brought that vibe back that the Travel Foreman issues had.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's funny because Ponticelli isn't doing it exactly like Foreman, but it's like you said, it's that vibe. It's very much that vibe. He's giving it his own look. It's different from what he did on Frankenstein, and it fits within the look of this book. I got to admit, though, the story is starting to get a little long in the tooth.
Well, I was glad to see next Swamp Thing, because they really need to get to that point.
Yeah, exactly.
We've really been sort of hovering, waiting for this crossover, and now apparently it's going to happen.
Still in the parking lot by the RV.
Right, exactly.
All the relationships are the same.
Yep.
The mother is angry,
yep.
And no one really likes Buddy.
Nobody does, except for Animal Man.
And the cat.
Oh, wait, no, Buddy is Animal Man. I mean the kid. What's the
no, no,
what's
Cliff.
The, nope. Cliff. Oh, I hate Cliff.
Yeah, but the mother likes Cliff, and he's, you know.
Yeah.
Animal Man's a shapeshifter now. He should have gotten a shirt.
You know what Cliff is? Cliff is like the prototype for Damien. He was the first snotty preteen kid that Grant Morrison wrote.
Yeah, it's true. That's a good point. So another Rocketeer Adventures issue, the last issue of Rocketeer Adventures 2, issue number 4, right? This is the last issue?
I think the last issue in general. They're moving out of the series by Wade and Samney.
Yeah. So we got a little Simonson action with a story by Louise and an art by Walt.
That was fine. To me, the draw was the middle story, the Warlord of Blargon.
The sci-fi one with art by J-Bone?
Yeah, which I didn't like at first, but then once I figured out what they're doing, I started laughing.
Yep.
And I laughed through the whole story. They took the trope of sort of an Adam Strange or John Carter scenario where Cliff gets shot into some sort of portal, ends up in an alien world, and he communicates with the aliens, or he thinks he communicates with the aliens, but in fact, everything he thinks is happening is the exact opposite of what's happening, and I thought it was very, very funny.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say the last story with art by John Byrne looked great.
Yes.
Looked really good.
John Byrne fits this style.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, who knew? And there's some backgrounds, too. I mean, not in every page and panel, but there's
Let's not get out of it. Come on.
Yeah, but this was some good John Byrne.
I think overall the second mini has been good. Not as great as the first one. I think the talent level is a little bit higher than the first one, but still very enjoyable. And this issue particularly, it was good.
Yeah.
Yeah, fun.
So I wasn't on the show when the first issue came out, and so I wanted to make sure to talk about it with the second issue. Are you guys reading Mind Management by Matt Kenton from Dark Horse?
Nope.
I thought it was Mind Management.
Mind Management? Yeah, the abbreviation of management. This is fantastic. I mean, this is and the thing is that, like, I definitely understand that Matt Kent might be an acquired taste, and if you didn't read Super Spy, you might not really get the art style or anything like that, but this is right in that Super Spy kind of vein, and it looks great. He's got a great premise going on with the story, and it's a mystery. Two issues in, and I'm totally hooked. And it's got little backup stories. It's got a little background information on the inside cover, front cover, and back cover. And then it's got a little backup story at the end. And the backup story from the first issue tied into what's going on in the main story in this issue, in the second issue. It's great. I mean, it's a little out there, a little more alternative of things, but but I love Kent's art style. It's done on this, like, you can see the blue line, like it's part of the design element. Like, it's just such a like crafted book. I just love it.
It took me like a month to get through Super Spy, and I tried to read this, and I was bored by it.
Well, you're missing out.
Says you.
I see. Yes.
Earth 2 number 3 brings us Green Lantern's origin. Alan Scott has now become Green Lantern, and what's interesting is I really like his costume design. It's the first one that I've seen from the new 52 that I've liked, because it's a simple design.
So
it's not bad.
It's the first one that's not overly designed. There's not a lot of extra elements that don't need to be there, as opposed to like flashes, which is interesting. Makes me wonder who designed this costume.
Totally agreed. And so in Earth 2, is Green Lantern's powers related to the Swamp Thing powers?
That's the question now, isn't it?
The green? It says he's a piece of instrument of the green. Isn't that Swamp Thing?
Yes.
I assume that because this is a different world, a dimension,
yeah,
that it does not operate under the same elemental rules.
But it's the probably not the same rules, but it's the same setup. It's the green versus the gray, and the gray,
I'll tell you,
the rotten.
I'll tell
death.
You something. The green is a bit of a bitch.
Yeah. I gotta say the end of the issue with Grundy, I was like, oh, Grundy. Well,
yeah, I like this a lot.
It was great. Yeah.
Marilyn Manson, like Grundy.
Even though they killed the boyfriend.
But that's the normal superhero trope.
Yeah, I know.
Everyone's harping about it, but killing that loved one is one of the main origin stories.
Yeah, I mean,
it's a cliche either way.
At least they didn't put him in a refrigerator.
Josh did not like this issue.
I just didn't. It was fine. Like, it didn't really affect me one way or another. There was a lot of just Alan Scott yelling at a cloud.
Yeah, there was.
and the cloud was kind of like irritated. and then like he's like, all right, I'm fine, I'm in, let's do this. I like Hawk Girl a lot as a character. I was glad to see her show up, but
I like that Jay Garrick I like that Jay Garrick couldn't fight. Mm-hmm. You know, like normally you get these powers and they're off and running, but like he's like, I can take this, I can run fast, but he doesn't know what to do with that.
Right,
I agree.
He doesn't really know how to harness it, which is a nice touch.
Yeah,
but I'm enjoying this.
I love it.
So. I will tell you what I think that James Robinson does really well, almost better than everybody. He really remembers the hero in a superhero story. He captures that wonder that we lose a little bit with a lot of stuff because it's so psychological and everything. And he's trying to be like, no, these people are heroes and they do things for the good and, you know, and people know it. I like that a lot. I like that.
That's the Alan Scott element. He's like, all right, I got to do this thing. I'm going to do it. Because that's my personality.
I like that.
Yeah. So those are the books we wanted to talk about this week. But if you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can make your own pull list, rate and review your books, and you can write user reviews and make your own picks of the week. And we can feature them on the show. And let's go through the top 5 picks of the week as chosen by the audience. This is a nice spread numbers-wise this week.
Yeah, even.
Number 5 was Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number 12 with 8.8%. Number 4 was Fury Max number 4 with 9.5%. Number 3 was Before Watchmen Ozymandias. Number 1 with 10%. Number 2 is Animal Man. Number 2 with 17.7%. And number 1 was Earth 2, number 3 with 21% of the votes.
Man, He-Man didn't place?
He-Man did not place.
Damn it.
He-Man might have been 6.
All right, so on to some user reviews. The Walrus 1235 reviewed Thief of Thieves number 6, a series that I've been enjoying a lot out of. And the Walrus 1235 gave the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5, a perfect book. Which I don't know if I agree with that. But not many agreed with the Walrus 1-2-3-5, as only 0.5% of you made it your pick of the week, and that might have just been the Walrus 1-2-3-5. I'm just going to keep saying the Walrus 1-2-3-5.
He may not have made it a pick. We don't know that.
Oh, yeah, who
knows? Did you practice the name before you read it out loud? Because that could trip a lot of people up.
Thief of Thieves scratches an itch that I didn't even realize I really had. So often we as readers get comfortable with the books we read. By that, I mean we begin to understand how a writer works, how they plot their stories, and what direction characters and plots will take. Even the unexpected can become, well, expected. It is incredibly refreshing to have a good old switcheroo pulled on you, and maybe that's why I'm so in love with this issue. In a time where things feel either editorially mandated or contrived, a genuine, quote-unquote, I didn't see that coming moment just feels nice. And to build to it over a few pages instead of just dropping it into the last moment, that makes me one happy comic book reader. And yeah, I mean, Nick Spencer, Robert Kirkman, Sean Martinborough have done a great job on Thief of Thieves, I think. I've been enjoying every issue. It's kind of fallen into that. It definitely has a rhythm where it's been consistent from issue to issue, but the twist in this one was definitely well received, and it was just a good comic.
Josh, did you drop off the book like I did?
Oh yeah, I read the first one.
Yeah,
I'll be curious if you give it
a three.
If you give it a shot in the trade, I'd be curious what you think of the complete story.
Yeah, I probably would be more likely to read it that way.
Yeah,
maybe. Roger Whitson of Action Comics 11 gives the story a 5 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5, and the pick of the week percentage was 1.4%. And he says, Morrison's Superman isn't afraid to get his hands dirty, but he also asks everybody else to pitch in, and they do. Simple. When a reporter asks him about the value of the new apartments he builds with the tenants, he says, "What? I'm sorry. I hear smoke over in Bakerline." Scenes like this and the one with Superman questioning the role of the JLA in the last issue shows just how powerful Superman can be as an example, especially if DC editorial would let him be the hero Morrison clearly wants him to be. The contrast... There's a lot of tinkering going on in the back.
Very presumptuous there. Yeah.
The contrast between this book and the stumbling Superman is almost night and day. I'm sick of whiny Superman involved in superpowered battles that have absolutely no significance. Ditch the space station and bring him back to Earth. Make the idealistic folk champion of the oppressed that reminds everyone else why they became heroes in the first place.
Wow. Strong words, Roger.
It was a really good story. The art was rough because it was two different artists.
Man, the art on this book is the tragedy. That's the thing.
If they could really just give him one artist who can do a monthly book, I don't care. Even it doesn't have to be Rags Morales. It obviously can't be Rags Morales, and I'm sorry, but give him one artist.
That's the thing is that it loses any sort of momentum because there's no consistency there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. I'm just going to go read All-Star Superman again.
I thought the story-wise is great.
Yeah. But it's a tragedy. It's tragic.
What is his new identity's name? Johnny what?
No, John Clark.
No, Johnny Clark. Yeah, everybody calls him Johnny Clark. Because he has faked Clark Kent's death to hide from this supervillain that's trying to kill him. So he's now Johnny Clark the fireman.
And he's got no originality when it comes to names. Yeah, John Clark. Yeah, that's it.
But they've returned. They're staying with that stuff in the beginning where he's a man of the people. He rebuilds a building that gets burned down, and he does the stuff that no one else will do, which is an interesting take on him.
Yep.
And now, if you're a creator or a publisher, not necessarily a He-Man book, but you could be a He-Man publisher as well. We accept all comers. If you're looking for a way to get your book in front of as many eyes as possible, as easily as possible, graphically is the best solution to do that. You can upload your books, your comic books, your children's books, your sketchbooks, your photography books, your He-Man books, just about anything graphic-based, and just a few simple steps, you're on your way to getting into the Amazon Kindle store, Barnes & Noble Nook store, Kobo, and of course the Apple iBook store. And there's no need to have readers find a specific app just made for reading comics. Send your readers to the digital bookstores where everyone is looking to get their books. And with 29% of all adults owning tablets and e-reader devices and sales in 2007 increasing 300% from the previous year, it's a lot of potential customers. You can find a full list of pricing and services at our website. Head over to graphically.com for more details.
Now, just to warn you, if you don't have the copyright or approval.
Yeah, you might get in trouble.
Yeah.
Who owns He-Man? Is it still Mattel? Does Mattel still exist?
Yeah, I think it's Mattel.
DC has got the license right now.
You know, I saw a girl the other day with the Mattel logo tattooed on her foot, and I was like, there's some dedication.
Wow.
Yeah.
Anyway. Wow. That's a painful tattoo also.
Yeah.
They gave us a lot of good times.
They did. They really did. Yeah.
I mean, nothing but good feelings about Mattel. I'm going to give a tattoo.
Hasbro and Kenner and the whole, Cool. So on to the emails. Our first email comes from Chris, who writes in and says, I'm currently riding the bus home to New York City, and I'm reading all about Marvel's announcements regarding Remender and Hickman's respective Marvel books. And he's referring to the Marvel Now announcement that happened last week. Yeah. I feel like both could be pretty cool, both based on art teams and the writing. Remender sounds a little more up my alley because it seems to be a bit more focused on a core group, something I feel that is a lost concept in Avengers titles these days. I read that Hickman plans on having his Avengers consist of 18-plus members. That's really the only turnoff for me. all the creative talent adds up to titles I'm willing to try. I almost said something instead of titles. I almost said something else. But am I the only one?
I can see that.
But am I the only one who misses the days of focused team books, meaning with a core lineup that you follow and act as a team? Remember the days of the blue and gold X-Men squads, Bomber Jacket Avengers? Yes, I like that. Heroes Return Avengers or any of the other classic lineups that were stable over a period of time that let characters interact and develop together? Isn't 18-plus members just a few too many? Doesn't it water down the concept of the Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes when every character in the Marvel Universe is an Avenger? What do you guys think? Are you for the overwhelming cast sizes that have been around and will continue to be around, referring to Hickman's Avengers, not Remenders? What's an ideal team cast size for you? Well, I think the first thing in this is to reserve judgment till you read the book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
maybe 11 of them will be killed in the first issue.
Yeah. That said, you hearken back to the X-Men blue and gold teams. That was 20 people alone.
Yeah.
By the way. And
also the Avengers constant. I mean, they were never a stable team. They're constantly changing members.
That said, Chris does bring up a good point that there was a time in, I don't know about DC, and Connor, you can probably fill me in on this, but mm-hmm. Actually DC as well. There was a time when the quote unquote team book had either 5 or 7 members. Five or seven was always seems to be the core of it. And at least in the X-Men books, there was always 5 or 7. And then when I was reading Grant Morrison's JLA, there were 7 in that as well. I feel like
but he kept
7,
adding.
Yeah, he did keep adding. No, but he would sub out too. He would remove that.
No, but it started with 7 and they went to the Pantheon.
Oh, you're
like
right.
12 or 15.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. They tell different kind of stories. And I can see Chris's point both ways.
Yeah.
Because like I was thinking about like the cartoons, Justice League and Justice League Unlimited. Justice League focused on the 7 core members, although they had Hawkgirl instead of Aquaman. And then they had Justice League Unlimited, which had like 100 members in the team. And I much preferred the first one because you got to focus on those characters.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you can tell interesting stories with giant teams. I mean, they had the satellite era of the Justice League had 20 people in the team.
Right.
And so you can, I mean, there's good stories to be had both ways. It just depends on what kind of story you're into.
You know what's funny is that it's funny to see the writers' different approaches, because I've heard writers and panels and interviews we've done, stuff like that. When they're doing the team book, sometimes they're picking characters based on powers. Mm-hmm. Like, all right, I need a flyer for this scene. All right, so we'll pull in the, you know, like, it's just like, I think that's that, as opposed to it being like a character-based story where it's, you know, you're watching Vixen get redeemed or whatever. No, they just needed a shapeshifter. You know,
like, I feel like Bendis really does it character-based.
Yeah, he
like,
does.
Wants
yeah.
to see how those guys interact with each other. It seems like it makes more sense on the surface as long as the story doesn't last 13 years.
Yeah.
No, I don't really prefer either. I think it just depends on how the story is.
I think I trust somebody like Hickman to take a cast like that and do something that's going to be...
He had a shitload of characters in the Fantastic Four and FF combined.
Yep.
Yeah.
He did all right with that.
Yeah. I think it's going to be all right. I mean, and Remender's already proven himself in the team book with X-Force, so as far as I'm concerned, it can only get better with the characters that he's playing with in Uncanny Avengers. So.
And besides, if you don't like the giant team, then don't read that book.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
like 5 Avengers books. Read the one that fits the, you know, the story you want to be reading.
I think that's the problem.
Yeah.
That there's 5 Avengers books.
Yeah.
You know.
Or it's not a problem if you have, that way you cater to people. If somebody wants a giant team book, there's a giant team book. If somebody wants a focused small team, there's a focused small team. I mean, that in that sense, it can be a good thing.
Listen, yeah. If you're going to want, if you like Avengers, you're going to get to read it 3 times a month.
Yes. From Hickman.
Yeah, from Hickman.
That's a lot of times.
It's a lot yes. of Avengers.
That's the Marvel strategy.
Yep.
John G. from Louisville, Kentucky writes and says, with DC's New 52 being compared or return to 90s comics with their use of the era's popular writers, editors, and some storytelling tropes, how would you feel if the whole New 52 ended up being an alternate reality in the same vein as the Age of Apocalypse? It could help to explain some of the inconsistencies in the timelines of some characters' histories and why there are so many unanswered questions. This could also help to return things to the past timeline if need be and allow new elements to be worked into that continuity. So what do you think?
All right, John. It's time for tough love. No one cares.
Yeah.
and I mean, there are readers who care, and you care, and that's fine, but nobody at DC cares about returning.
Nope.
They're interested in moving their books, and they did this, and they committed to it. And while I agree that I don't think the books have been great overall, there are some standouts that are good, but a lot of the changes were just almost steps backwards. But no one was reading them before, and more people are, and they're talking about them now.
Yep.
So when they're looking for an exit, maybe, but I don't see that happening.
They're not going to go back. Even if, like, you know, I just can't. I mean, that's the thing, is that you can't go back.
Caveat that by anytime soon.
Anytime soon, yeah.
You know, 5 years, 10 years.
Yeah.
Who knows? But as it stands right now, they're full speed ahead with this, and it looks like they're driving more into the direction of the sort of return to early 90s Marvel. Yeah.
True.
For whatever reason, they push their chips into the center of the table with this thing, so they can't back out now. There's too many jobs.
And it's worked out for them relatively.
Yeah.
You know, like they sold a lot of books.
They sell a lot of trades. They apparently sell, you know, growing number of digital sales. I mean, they're from a business standpoint, it seems to be successful, or at least for a year it has been. Who knows? You know, in 2 years, but. You know, it's just the way to just look at it. If you want to look at it as an alternate timeline, look at it as an alternate timeline. Read the old books. I mean, they're all fictional timelines. It just doesn't really.
All right. So if you have any questions for us, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com. But we also get voicemail from you as well. And we've been getting some great voicemails. So thanks to everybody who's been calling in, except for the guy who called in about the rebar. Not cool, man. Not cool.
Called it twice.
Anyway. So our first voicemail's got a question about a new digital series.
Hey, iFanboy, Sunnyvale Trash, calling from Toronto, Canada. Just wanted to see if you guys have been checking out that new Legends of the Dark Knight series. I don't know if I've really heard any talk about it on the show. I think it's been pretty great so far. Seeing Jeff Lemire draw Batman was fantastic. And I also had a question about the old Batman Legends of the Dark Knight series. It's all pretty much available digitally, so I was kind of plan to go through and cherry pick at. Just curious what were some of the best arcs or runs or things to really look out for with that series. Love the show. Keep it up, guys. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, sure. The guy from Canada likes the Jeff Lemire Batman story. Big surprise there.
You know, I haven't read it and I've been meaning to. I just forget.
I can see that.
Yeah,
I know it doesn't. I know it flies in the face of all digital conventional wisdom, but I'm not looking for, you know, smaller chapters more often. I'm looking for longer chapters.
Interesting.
So like these, I wait for these collections of the digital stories because I don't want to read 9 pages a week. I want to read them all when they're done.
I just haven't been able to integrate it into my rhythm. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Oh, I totally get that. I got books all over the place with that problem.
Yeah.
I totally want to read that.
It's tough. I just don't want to read 5 pages a week. I want to read the whole thing when you're done.
So, Connor, I remember Legends of the Dark Knight. It was a very long-running series, and it was a very cool concept, but I don't remember much specifically about it.
It ran from 89 to 2007.
That was an example of when I got really into comics, and my family acknowledged it. One Christmas, I got a bunch of comics for Christmas, and it was like, you know that moment when nobody understands you? And like, so imagine young teenage Ron open up Christmas presents in the morning and gets a copy of Legends of the Dark Knight number one, and I'm just like, oh, I like the X-Men.
It was like the one you want, dear.
Yes, and
then the next year I got the Robin, the new Robin miniseries.
Jeez,
I was like, great, thanks.
I was too young for this series, and what this series was a bunch of mostly out of continuity stories by a bunch of guys who are big names now, but weren't necessarily back then, or at least not to me as a 13 or 14 year old kid. You know, it's not. It just wasn't. If this series as it was came out now, it'd probably be one of my favorites. But as a kid, it was the wrong time. So you had guys like Grant Morrison did arcs, and Garth Ennis did a couple of Batman stories there. Howard Chaykin, Matt Wagner, James Robinson, Abnett Lanning. I mean, these are guys who now would be exciting, but as a kid, they weren't on my radar.
And they weren't the continuity because you were like, this isn't.
It wasn't so much that. It was just the fact that they weren't guys I knew, really. So I didn't really read them. I would pick and choose the arcs I read depending on who was doing it. And one of the ones I did read that I remember was a big one was the first time you were introduced to the Venom drug, which is what, you know, brought Bane about, was in Legends of the Dark Knight. And that was actually a pretty big deal at the time. And I don't remember if Bane showed up himself for the first time in Legends of the Dark Knight, but for sure the drug did because Batman got hooked on it. I remember he had to go into detox. But a lot of guys who are big now, McDuffie, Ostrander, John Arcudi, Bill Willingham, Devin Grayson, you know, a lot of people who, you know, sort of cut their teeth in that book because it was a sort of, you know, Adam Beechin, Bruce Jones, Christos Gage, a lot of Denny O'Neill arcs. So there's a lot of good stuff in there. And if it's all available now digitally, you can go in there and find these stuff. If you want to read it, if you want to read a Garth Ennis Batman story, that's in there. If you want to read more Grant Morrison stuff from, you know, 20 years ago, Klaus Janson drew, it's in there. You know, so.
That sounds amazing.
Matt Wagner wrote and drew an arc. Yeah.
Cool.
So there's good stuff in there. This would be a huge book now. This is sort of the book that the zeitgeist, you know, it's a out of continuity, high profile creator book. But it was at the time, in 92, it was going up against Youngblood. So
it was a tough market.
Yeah.
All right, cool. All right, our next voicemail's got a question about exclusivity.
Hey, fanboys. John from Long Island. How you doing? listen, I was on Twitter the other day, and I saw Ryan Ottley complaining about exclusive contracts. He thinks they're kind of ruining comics. He said he kind of, while he loves Invincible, he'd love to go out and draw the things. And that paralyzed me for a couple hours, and I was just stuck there thinking. And after a few hours of deep thought, I realized I would love to see him draw some other stuff, even though I like Invincible a whole lot. So is there anybody else like that in the industry that's tied down in one area that you'd love to see do some other work around? Or what do you think about his comments about the exclusivity of artists? Love to hear what you think, guys.
That's a great question, and I had to think about it for a good, like, 6 hours. I sat and thought about it.
We had a meeting.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, where we just, and the thing was, is like, listen, we need to dedicate the time to think about this, and so we're just not going to talk, and we're just going to sit here and think until we're ready to talk.
But together.
Yeah, together. Yeah, like a group think, almost.
Yeah.
I think generally, exclusivity in general is a bad thing. Period.
But it depends on your perspective.
Yes.
It's a bad thing in the terms of, like, there's a lot of guys who get exclusive and they have to put them on something, so they just get thrown around.
They don't do anything. Like, we've seen, and I don't want to get into specifics, but we've seen a case of an artist go exclusive with Marvel or DC, and for whatever reason it doesn't go well, and then get literally banished to comics that don't matter, and it's a waste of their talent, and then you lose them for a year.
Yeah. And then afterwards, they come out of it with less market value than they started because they're basically kept on the bench.
Exactly, exactly.
Now, on the other side of it, if you're an artist who is up and coming and, you know, you don't want to hunt around for work constantly, like, it can be a really good thing. It comes along with, you know, benefits like being an employee, having some sort of peace of mind for the future. Now, those are all things that anybody working wants.
Yeah.
So there's that side of it. What's funny is that, like, Ryan's not going anywhere. He's more or less exclusive.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's exclusive in all but name. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, I was like, are you going to do it? He's like, no, I like doing this. I'm good. And I, you know, it's funny. A long time ago, I used to say, like, I'd really love to see him do a bunch of other stuff because Ryan is an amazing artist.
Yeah.
Really, really, and a really nice guy. But now I'm just like, nah, he's on Invincible. That's his thing. That's what he does. You know, like, his style has become that thing. You know, it's part and parcel of Invincible every bit as much as Robert Kirkman.
Yeah.
Other guys, you know, sort of in a situation where they don't go do anything else.
That's a good question.
It's hard to say because people bounce around so much. There's hardly anyone that sticks on a book. It's Kirkman's guys.
We used to feel that. Yeah, I mean, Otley's a fantastic example of that. We used to feel that way about Terry Moore, and then he went out and did a bunch of stuff, and it didn't really make much of an impact. So now we ended up that we like him better on his own stuff.
Yeah.
oddly enough. I'm trying to think of somebody who's been on something for a really long time.
There really isn't anyone anymore. Everyone sort of does a couple issues here, a couple issues there, and bounces around, and there's no...
I think people would make a case for Scotty Young.
Yeah. Yes, yes. He's somebody, as great as the Oz books are, I really want to see him either come back or do his creator on stuff that he's been talking about.
Now, just by saying come back, that pisses him off.
Right. No, I know.
Asking all the time, like, why don't you do real comics or with that? You know, right. It's like,
I'm not discounting it.
I know. But I'm just saying, like, that's the kind of thing that people ask, though. They think, well, what are you going to do with, you know? He doesn't really want to do superheroes. He's having fun doing Oz. He wants to do creator-owned stuff, but, you know, he's exclusive, and that's, you know, he got a great deal out of it. But that's a guy, like, it would be fun to see him let loose some of the skills that he's built up on Oz on some other stuff just to see what happens.
Yeah.
I think is sort of what you meant.
Scotty's a good one there. It's a good question. I don't know who else is left.
I mean,
people bounce.
You know, like, guy like Mark Buckingham has been on Fables, you know, forever.
Well,
the lucky thing is that
we had a exclusive battleground in the mid 2000s that is starting to those deals are starting to end. So you're seeing somebody like Ed Brubaker be able to leave Marvel and go do, you know, Fatality Image or, you know, who knows, whatever he can do. You're seeing Mark Bagley leave Marvel, go to DC, come back to Marvel. You know what I mean? So I feel like the cycle's, you know, is churning a little. There's somebody else that I just thought of on the DC side that is no longer exclusive, and I can't remember now.
There's a bunch of guys who are no longer exclusive who I've
Grant Morrison. Yeah, Grant Morrison. I mean, he was stuck in DC because of the exclusive, and now he's going to Image to do other stuff. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he'll never go back to Marvel, but, you know, but it's interesting to see them do other things.
It's funny. It used to be that Image didn't count for the exclusives, and now it does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can do an Image book. We won't worry about that. Right. Now
that's
like,
what happens when you increase your market share at almost 10%.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, all right. Well, we're running out of time, but interesting question. So thanks for calling, and you can leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS. It's 1-888-326-2697. We do other podcasts.
We do the Don't Miss podcast where we like to talk about a book on Monday that is coming out that Wednesday. This week, we've switched it up just a little bit, and I'm talking to Tom King, who is the writer of A Once Crowded Sky, which is not a comic book. It's a novel.
What?
About superheroes as illustrated by Tom Fowler.
Cool.
Comic books. So I talked to Tom about that. Tom has one hell of an interesting story. He was in the CIA. Can't talk about it very much. And you should listen to this and check out the book. The cover is absolutely beautiful. And you'll if you listen to the show, you'll find out there's a little bit of an iFanboy connection to that book. But it's a full-on real novel. You know, Simon & Schuster, you know, actual big deal publisher.
Is there do I know this connection? Oh, I do know the connection. You're right. Yes. Yeah. That's cool.
Did you ask him who killed Kennedy?
He wouldn't. Well, he's awful.
Did you ask him about assassinating Castro?
All right. Anyway.
They wanted to get the beard off him. It was fucking ridiculous without that beard.
Besides that, there's the Make Comics podcast, which I do with Andy Schmidt. We're actually going to be taking a slight hiatus around the time of San Diego just because we can't get shows done and out.
So don't miss.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's true. So we'll be back with Make Comics and Don't Miss probably in a couple of weeks after San Diego.
Josh, Ron, and I got together and talked about The Amazing Spider-Man, the movie no one's talking about that we all went and saw. So if you saw Amazing Spider-Man, you want to hear a show about it, or you're just curious in general, you can look behind the show in the feed anywhere you are listening on iTunes or whatever aggregator you've got. Or it's available for streaming on iFanboy.com. You can find the three of us talking about Amazing Spider-Man, and the one who liked it the most might shock you.
Shocking.
Shocking.
And then additionally, as we mentioned earlier, San Diego Comic-Con is upon us. It kicks off this week and we will be in San Diego. And if you are going to be in San Diego, we'd love to see you. There's a couple of places where you can do that. First off, you can see Josh on the 7th Annual Comics Podcasting All-Star Panel, which will be on Thursday in room 9 at 6 p.m. So you definitely don't want to miss that. And then after the panel, come on over to the Andaz Hotel for the iFanboy Graphically Cocktail Party, which will be at on the roof deck of the Andaz Hotel, same place where it was last year, from 6 to 9, 600 F Street. You definitely don't want to miss it. And if you haven't seen the flyer for the party, it's probably our best one yet. Big thanks to Gabriel Hardman and Jordy Belair for helping us get that flyer done, and it looks awesome. And we can't wait to see everybody and raise a drink with you and enjoy San Diego. So if you go to iFanboy.com, there's a up in the buzzable bar, there's a link to the San Diego goings-ons. And even if you can't go to the con, stay focused on iFanboy.com. We're going to be posting all the news as it comes out. And so, you know, if you can't, you know, if you're home away from the con, iFanboy is your home to be at the con. So there you go.
Was Ron and I'll be at the party while Josh is on the panel.
Yeah, setting up.
So. It might suck.
The party or the panel?
No, the party will be good. But, panel. You know, it depends. I'm going to get loaded.
Nice.
You know, I think it's time to start throwing firebombs on these panels. Because, yeah. Listen, whatever it is that needs to be said has been said. So we're going to have to be creative about this.
Stale?
Listen, I didn't use that word.
I'm not on the panel, so I used the word.
Listen. Fisto is an extra strong warrior with an enlarged right metal hand.
Oh, I had Fisto. I totally had Fisto.
Fisto. Mechaneck is the master of the universe with a telescoping neck that enables him to serve as a scout and do reconnaissance. Man-at-Arms is the one who gave him his extended prosthetic neck, apparently when he was sleeping.
I didn't know.
Although in the 2002 series, this is never discussed.
Oh, the Man-at-Arms 2002 series
only
doesn't
shown
count.
Repairing kinks and damage to Mechaneck's neck.
Oh, my God.
Stridor. Cyclone. Roboto,
yes, Roboto, Mossman,
and of course, Mossman.
Oh no, you know who was my favorite? Was Cyclone was my favorite because he spun. Cyclone was awesome because his whole torso was on a thing that turned, and there was a little wheel on his waist, and you could make him spin into a cyclone.
Mm-hmm. Who was the bee?
Buzz. Yeah. Oh, I found him.
Buzz off. No, it's Buzz off.
Buzz off. But his real name.
It's unpronounceable.
It's
oh God.
I'm sorry. I couldn't help.
That was great. Oh, Zodak. I forgot about Zodak, the cosmic enforcer.
Mm-hmm.
good times. All right. So moving on.
We're running long, people.
You can go to fanboy.com. Sorry, I was looking at List of Toys. You can go to fanboy.com for my Pick of the Week review, and you'll be able to read Ron's Book of the Month review very soon, hopefully before San Diego. And all the great topics, discussion, the news, if you want to know about Marvel Now, we got all the information. If you want to know about the new writers on Catwoman and other books like that, you can go to fanboy.com. For all of our social network links, go to fanboy.com/about and be our friends. And follow twitter.com/iFanboy, especially during San Diego, and facebook.com/iFanboy for all the news. You'll be posted there. It'll be like you're at San Diego without any of the foot or lower back pain.
That's funny. Very good. I'll take that. It's good. Anyway, you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com or leave a voicemail at 888-FANBOYS, which is 326-2697, with any questions, comments, concerns, discussion topics, etc., the things you want to talk about. We had a lot of really good questions lately, so thank you for sending them in. Voicemails have been very strong. Keep that up.
Yes, awesome. And if you like what you listen, what you hear on this podcast or on the Don't Miss podcast or the Make Comics podcast, go to iTunes and leave a review for those podcasts. Let people know how much you enjoy it and help spread the word. And also, if you're going to San Diego or going to any Comic-Con, let people know that you listen to iFanboy. Wear it on your shirt. If you got the old iFanboy shirts, wear them out. Let people know. Spread the word. You're our marketing team. You're our street team, and we appreciate it. So thank you very much. All right, well, that's it. I got to go pack for San Diego because I'm leaving sooner than I thought. So that happened. So until next time, I am Ron.
I am Battle Cat.
I'm Cringer.
And the masters of the universe. I am Adam, Prince of Eternia and defender of the secrets of Castle Grayskull. This is Cringer, my fearless friend. Fabulous secret powers were revealed to me the day I held aloft my magic sword and said, "By the power of Grayskull, became the mighty Battle Cat, and I became He-Man, the most powerful man in the universe. Only three others share this secret. Our friends, the Sorceress, Man-at-Arms, and Orko. Together, we defend Castle Grayskull from the evil forces of Skeletor.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.